sung by her.
How you doing? My name is Andy, and I am an alcoholic. I'm gonna tell you something funny right now. The first time I spoke, that was my entire qualification, and they went around the room after that. So everything after this is what I've learned about me and you and God since I got here, so it's pretty good. And my home group is the Victory Group. We meet Sundays at 6 p.m. We're having our group anniversary tonight, so if you're free, come on by at 5 o'clock. My sobriety date is October 8th, 1987, and a couple of my sponsees are in the front row, along with my wife and my mother. So I'm in good shape. I sound loud enough? Okay. A couple of things I always say, and they're important to me. This is a little bigger meeting than I'm used to, and I'm sure there may be a newcomer or two here, and what I'm going to do tonight is tell my story. As somebody said, that's the most important thing. We're celebrating AA's birthday, which doesn't start when Bill stopped drinking. It starts when Bill met Bob. That's when AA started, when someone transmitted this message by telling his story, and that's what's important. And if you're here and you're new and you don't know what's going on, well, you're not quite, if you've been here a while and you still don't know what's going on, what I'm going to do is tell you my story. I'm going to tell you what happened. And the things, we use the things as tools, and not that important. The actions that occurred when I drank are things that happen when I drink. But what you got to listen for is how I thought. The process of my thinking that put me in a position where the only option I had was to make terrible choices because I just couldn't do anything else. The things that prevented me from doing things I wanted to do. And that's the part of my story that's important. You know, the things are just fun and they make you pay attention and you hopefully grab a little. But that's what we're really looking for. Because this is a disease of the mind. That's the part that's dangerous. You know, that I drink and then when I start drinking I can't stop. That physical compulsion, if I didn't have the thought to drink, would be academic. You know, it just wouldn't matter. So the thinking is the important part. But I will tell you, by the time I was 13 years old, I was somehow, my mother's here now, I just said, and I had a nice family, and I had a happy childhood. There was no tragedies, no terrible things going on. And I was so separated from people, sometimes when they spoke, I couldn't hear them. I had fears I couldn't explain. I'd be in public, and I would just have panic attacks. I couldn't really participate well in school. We would travel. I'd want to say things to my parents and my siblings that I thought were funny and jokes, and I would just get caught up, and I couldn't, sometimes. And I got this cousin, and I was up there in New Hampshire, and he's like, do you drink? Hey, I'm a man of the world. I'm 13. Yeah, I drink. So he had stolen my grandfather's Fleischmann's, and we did some shots of Fleischmann's, which at 13, I can tell you, is not something you want to do again because your eyes water, you cough, you spit. And we didn't decide drinking wasn't good. We decided we needed iced tea because if we mixed it with iced tea, we can get it down. Because it felt good. I felt okay. You know, that thing that happens to us happened. And I was okay. Nice little glow. And for a long time after that, having a drink and feeling okay is what happened. You know, I didn't just immediately start shooting people and running crazy and doing all sorts of wildness. I just wanted to drink more. And I can remember very early, I still live up the block from where I grew up, and there was a stop sign, and underneath it, it said, avoid hangovers, stay drunk. And my brain went, that is genius. That's the kind of thing I need to know. And I just started drinking. And the few things that were in my life, I was active in a church. I did enjoy going there. I was an avid bicyclist. I was a hobbyist. I did models. I like to paint. I'm back to modeling. I love modeling. I'm painting, actually. And I had some friends, and I had things going on in my life. You know, I liked girls. I went to dances, and I was doing some stuff. By the time I was 16, none of those things were really in my life anymore. Church was out because they told me I couldn't drink and go to church. I got along with the pastor pretty well, but he told me I couldn't keep coming to youth group drunk, you know, especially driving. Because he's like, you're 16, you know, you're on a motorcycle, you're drunk, this is no good. And, you know, I forget after school activities, I wasn't going to regular school anymore. That was out because it interfered. I used to say I was a part-time student. I went when it was raining. And, because again, I had a motorcycle, so why go to school? And, you know, I had a couple of friends. I really had one friend, this guy Mike. And the running joke is to this day, unfortunately, that, you know, I'm his only friend. And I got one friend and he got none, because he's not a friendly fella. And my life was shrinking rapidly, but it was one at a time. I lost a little here, I lost a little there. And whenever it got pointed out or I thought about it, I'd be like, well, you know, nah, it's all right. You know, I get to drink. And not seeing, you know, at the time, I didn't have the emotional maturity, the intellect, or the ability to see through my lies, that I just wanted to do what I wanted to do, because I wanted to drink. And that's what mattered to me. The physical compulsion, once I started drinking, was, for me, horrendous. Once I started drinking, I would lose days and weeks and months like it was okay. I wasn't a big sleeper then. I would just start drinking and I would go. But the mental insanity for me was just so subtle that I just wouldn't notice that I was just outright lying to myself. And I would, you know, I love saying it. I would lie to people because I just loved lying to people. You ask me what time it was, I'd be like, oh yeah, no, it's 9. It's nowhere near 9. And that kind of dishonesty, you know, I'm also a petty thief. I have a thing about stealing stuff right off the counter at supermarkets and stores. That kind of dishonesty is not what's going to, I mean, at this point in my life, it's not a part of it. But at that time, that wasn't the dishonesty they were talking about. They were talking about my mother throws a birthday party for me and has my uncles coming in from Pennsylvania, and all these people are going to be there, and they cook a dinner, and I tell them I'm going to be there, and I want to be there because they're going to make me dinner and give me things and be nice to me, and I have a drink and I can't get there. That kind of dishonesty. Because I said, yeah, I'll have a drink, then I'll go home. No chance. It's not something that happened on anything like a consistent basis. If I drank, I drank. I don't do things and drink. You know, I wouldn't even say 50-50, you know. Occasionally I would have a drink and I would get home, but it wasn't standard. Odds are I didn't. And that kind of lying is what got to me. There's a whole middle of my story which I go into sometimes. It's going to get very short today. I end up in the Navy. I'm a drunk. I'm from New York. I don't like authority. I ride a motorcycle, so take a stab at this. I get arrested. And I get arrested often. And they have a big, lengthy trial. General court martial. They're very mad at me. They give me a nice, long sentence. And the most important thing that happened when I was there is I ended up doing solitary for 11 and a half months. Not good for you, they told me later. But I met, there was a Marine there. God bless this guy. Later on, I figured out he had to be in AA because he looked at what was going on. And he came to my cell and he told me, if you tell him you go to AA, to the AA meetings, you'll see women, you'll get coffee, and you'll get cigarettes. It's like sitting in a room alone. I'm like, I'm in. I'll go to the AA meeting. That'll be good for me. And I went to the AA meeting. And a woman spoke from Virginia, never saw her before, never saw her again, and she spoke about that lie, that having a drink and looking ahead and going, she saw that she didn't know what was going to happen next, and it horrified her. And I'm like, well, I knew when I took a drink, I didn't know what was going to happen next, but I loved that, because I would think the adventure was beginning, because I still believed the lie so strong. Later on, I got to fear it, but at that time, I could see the similarities. I said, yeah, she thinks like me. She doesn't know what's going to happen, but she still does it. And I was supposed to be there a lot longer, but God bless my parents. They got a lawyer. They went through my paperwork. And when I was indoctrinated in the Navy, I had seen a shrink. And he wrote diagonally on the page of my evaluation, alcoholic. Because oddly enough, you know, it was a psychological evaluation to get in the Navy, which I wanted to do. It was 9 a.m., so of course I showed up hammered. And what it did is it made it that I wasn't legally enlisted in the Navy, so they had no jurisdiction over me, so they had to release me. Happy day. So I get released, and I was at such a, this is 11 and a half months without a drink, and with my own thinking, I had a huge resentment that they released me. I was guilty. You know, and it was one of those things that my thinking took away. I was happy to get out, but I just couldn't enjoy it because I was too busy being miserable and angry at other people and pointing the finger. And they, just the madness that goes on. And so I jump in the car with my parents. If you want to take a long car ride, get out of prison, get in the car with your parents and drive from Virginia to New York. And what we did there is that my father was a very good man. He was the kind of guy that got things done. And we drew up a plan. I said, get me a job, buy a car, go to work every day. Getting a job and going to work every day are two things in my world. And, you know, get a girlfriend, get an apartment, get a hobby, go bowling on Wednesdays or some whatever hobbies are. And just not drink. And just get on living my life. And it was a really good plan. Two little problems. One, I really just didn't understand alcoholism. And two, I was going to do this. I really thought I could marshal my will and make a decision, because I got a lot of will. People, it's not lack of willpower. I got a problem with direction, but I can drink all day, go to work all day, drink all day, go to work all day for a long time before I give in. That's willpower. But to not drink, it just didn't work there. I could overcome other problems. I just couldn't do it. It just didn't work with the drinking, and I just didn't know that. And my father, when he said something was going to happen, that's what happened. And there was no doubt in my mind this plan was going to work. So we get back to New York. We're at the house. There's a whole party going on because Andy's coming home. And this guy says, hey, I'm 15 minutes home. The guy says, you want a beer? Well, yeah. Yes, I do. And I could tell you now, I didn't think I was going to have two. I didn't think I was going to lose 3 years of my life in a mad blackout, drunken haze, committing suicide, ending up on the West Coast, and all that other crazy stuff that happened to me. That's not what entered my head. I didn't even think, oh, maybe I'll be out late tonight. I thought, yeah, I'll have a beer. Never happened once in my life. There was no reason to believe that. And this is 11 and a half months away from a drink, with an honest desire to stop drinking, a willingness to do things I don't want to do, like get a job and a hobby. And I still, 15 minutes is all I got. And like I said, after that, there were suicide attempts. I tried hanging myself, starving myself. I wrecked a bunch of, about 17 cars. Every one of them hit a solid object. Later on, I put it together. That was not an accident. Everything was solid. I was trying to kill myself on a regular basis. I did things and went places I did not belong. Thank you. And I get arrested again. Nothing, and I knew it was nothing. Drunk in public, no big deal. And I don't know what to do. I'm at my wit's end. I'm 23 at this point, and I'm hopeless. I come out of there, I know I'm going to drink. I know I'm going to die the way I am. I just don't see how I'm going to get out. And lo and behold, my genius mother tells my father, do what you got to do, is the way I heard it. You can do whatever you want to him now, because she was kind of keeping him from beating me to death, I think. And get him to them meetings. Take him to AA. My father would stick me in the car and drive me to AA, and he would sit outside the meeting to make sure I went in. And I met you people. And here's where the miracle happens. I did what you asked of me. No idea why, it's not my nature. I met a guy, started talking to him, he loaned me his sponsor. I couldn't ask a guy, so he had to lend me one. And he dropped me off and he picked me up. He circled the little meeting list and sent me in the door. And this went on for a couple of months, and he saw I was getting ready to get out of here. Like I said, I spoke at my 90 days. I said my name. That was fun. And I was ready to bolt. And he got me to speak at his fifth anniversary. And it was a dark room. I knew everybody in the front row, a lot like this. And when I left that meeting, it happened. The 1,000 screaming monkeys in my head went away. They went away. The fear that whatever was going to happen any second now just about left. And I was able to walk around, and for months, people said to me, you look different, you're okay now, you're out of the fog. And I was, and it was from you people. Since then, I've done a million things. I'm a huge fan of literature. I had a second sponsor who showed me, you know, through our literature, the big book mainly, and the 12 steps, and applying those principles on a daily basis in my life like they matter, I can be free in every situation. And that's what they give me here. The ability to stay sober for the rest of my life. We'll get methodologies, a whole different thing with everything else. But I can stay sober. I don't have to have the fear of it coming back. I've recovered. It's gone. And that's the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. Yeah, and in closing, the beauty of this is, It's free. You don't have to be a genius. You just have to sit with somebody and be willing to follow a few simple but radically, you know, very rash things. But if you're a drunk like me, not so rash. It's life or death. You know, find a God or die. And I know it's not an easy choice, because it wasn't. But once I made that choice and moved forward, my life has gotten better daily. And like I said, I got a wife in the front row. Nobody saw that coming. I got married in October. I'm a newlywed even, you know, at 47. Yeah. You know, I'm happy. You can ask the people around me. You know, I've had deaths. I've had gotten married, births. All the things that can happen in life has happened. And my day goes, I get up, I pray to my God. He tells me I'm going to be okay. I am okay. And that's where it comes from. And with that, I'll say thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And now we're going to do our sobriety countdown. And that will be John.